This evening, so we have several that's out, but it never fails that even when we have several out, the Singletaries come along and stop by on their way to Louisiana to visit with us and worship with us. So we appreciate them being here as always. Tonight we're going to be looking at Psalm 32. And which, as I mentioned this morning at the end of service, we're going to talk about quit horsing around. When you look up things on, you know, when I look for pictures and things for charts to get you the idea, you can kind of see this one where the horse has got his head stuck in the tree right there. I don't know how in the world that actually happened, but someone caught it on camera. And I guess that's a great illustration of what it means to quit horsing around. Or even that. We find that Psalm 32 actually talks about horsing around. And as you go to Psalm 32 with me, we're going to be looking at verse 9. Verse 9. Notice what it says there in Psalm 32 and verse 9. Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. We realize that in the scriptures that the Bible is filled with reminders to look at the world all around us and learn from examples that we find. One of those examples that we come to mind as well as that is the ant, who is mentioned in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. You know, we take that in relation to people who are sluggards and stuff with that, things of that nature. But Proverbs chapter 6, if you'll just notice that with me as well. Proverbs chapter 6. Notice there in verses 6 through 11. Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 11. It says, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways, and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. That's a very common thing that we see every day, isn't it? Especially now as the spring comes around and ants are digging their beds out. Great example of industry and not procrastinating. There's wisdom to be learned in observation and the things that we have every day to remind us, even the creation of God. That of Proverbs chapter 30, if you notice there as well, Proverbs chapter 30, verses 24 through 28. There are four things which are little on the earth, the wise man of Proverbs says, but they are exceedingly wise. There goes our ants again, he talks about in verse 25. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer, just like that of Proverbs chapter 6 talks about. The rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in the crags. The locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. The spider skillfully grasps with its hands, and it is in kings' palaces. So there is wisdom to be learned in observation of the things that we see. And like I said, I don't know if many of you realize that part of the horse which we're going to be talking about tonight was in there of Psalms or even anywhere throughout the Bible, but there's many places that horses are talked about in the Bible and what they're admired for and what they are not admired for. Kind of like the ants and things. It says that we observe them and we think about them in industry, about how they are not sluggish, that they're always preparing. But how many of us really like ants? We're going around killing them, aren't we? We're trying to make sure they don't get in our house, make sure they don't get in our car, make sure they stay away from the yard, make sure all that other stuff. But it says these things we observe they're exceedingly wise. Exceedingly wise in the way that they do things. But yet, we'll see this about the horse. David tells us not to imitate the horse or the mule, doesn't he, in Psalm 32 and verse 9. Do not be like the horse. Okay, this is directly Not like Proverbs chapter 6, not like Proverbs chapter 30, where it's exceedingly wise, right? As far as the other and the insects and things, it says to observe and to imitate things. But do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. So we're going to talk about horsing around, first of all. Job chapter 39 is one of the scriptures that we'll find, other than Psalm 32, where we find horses mentioned. In Job chapter 32, Job 39, maybe I shouldn't have took that nap today. In Job 39, remember last Sunday I was talking about how it was morning time. Every time I take a nap, that's what happens. That's why I don't sleep very often. Job 39, verses 19 through 25, if you will, for just a moment. Notice what Job says here. Job 39, if you notice there in verses 19 through 25. Have you given the horse strength? Have you closed his neck with thunder? Notice what God says to him. Can you frighten him like a locust? His majestic snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and not frightened. Nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness. Notice that, fierceness and rage. Nor does he come to a halt because the trumpet has sounded. At the blast of the trumpet he says, aha, and he smells the battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shouting. Horses are admirable for their strength. We know that. Horses, mules, and things we're talking about from Psalm 32 and verse 9, that's what they're known for. How they, you can not just use one to pull a heavy load, but when you add more, pull even more, right? But it's something that's talked about here, that their strength cannot be relied upon. Psalm 33, verses 16 and 17. Although we have that picture of their strength and how admirable it is in Job chapter 39, Psalm 33 tells us in verses 16 and 17, no king is saved by the multitude of an army. A mighty man is not delivered by great strength. A horse is a vain hope for safety. Notice that. Neither shall it deliver any by its great strength. We realize that horses were often caught in the wild, often were unmanageable, and hence the warning that we have in verse 9 that we read of our text of Psalm 32, not to be like. Horses often only give service when constrained and forced into doing so. That's what you find in James chapter 3 and verse 3. In James chapter 3 and verse 3. More I studied on this of horses, I didn't realize really how much horses are mentioned throughout the Bible. But James chapter 3, behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, right? And we turn about how much of their body? You turn their entire body, don't you? It's what he says. Notice the control, how they're constrained and forced. It brings to mind the way Israel was in their time. Israel was often like that. God had to use force to get use out of them. Jeremiah 31 and verse 18, he said, I have surely heard Ephraim bemoaning himself. You have chastised me, and I was chastised like an untrained bull. Restore me, and I will return, for you are the Lord my God. Jeremiah 31 and verse 18. That really has not changed as the way we think and the way that we operate. But Proverbs 26 and verse 3 brings to mind this very thing, that people are sometimes like that as well. Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 3. You'll see this verse again. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. Look at the relation that's in that verse. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. We look back to the days of old, and the Israelites were known to be rebellious. Do we see people being rebellious today? Absolutely. Do we see those that need to have strong control? Absolutely. But here's the thing with horses. As we know, the problem is that because of their strength, mighty strength you would even say, they will often rush headlong into things without even thinking. Jeremiah 8 verses 6 and 7, I listened and heard, but they do not speak aright. No man repented of his wickedness, saying, what have I done? Everyone turned to his own course as the horse rushes into the battle. Even the stork in the heavens knows her appointed times, and the turtle dove, the swift, and the swallow observe the time of their coming, but my people do not know the judgment of the Lord. Notice the description there. As the horse rushes into battle, turning to its own course, doing whatever it wants to do, maybe not even realizing what the consequences are of rushing headlong into something. How many of us done that? Not even thinking, and you just rush off into it. There's consequences to that, right? Like hitting a bump, holding water or something. You know, you never know when that's going to come up. Like Israel, they don't always use their heads. Jeremiah 4 and verse 22. You know, you find that God speaks about the people there in Jeremiah 4 and verse 22 in such a way that he says, for my people are foolish. They have not known me. They are silly children, and they have no understanding. They are wise to do evil, but to do good they have no knowledge. People rush into things without even thinking about it, without any thought to what could happen. Isaiah 59 and verse 7 gives us this very thought here. Well, I thought I had it on the chart and had it outlined that way, but Isaiah 59 and verse 7, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity, wasting, and destruction are in their paths. In their paths, that's where it lies. Making haste to shed innocent blood, running to evil. That kind of gives us the idea of a horse that he's talking about in Psalm, isn't it? It was a sin that actually kept Moses and Aaron out of the promised land. Numbers chapter 20 and verse 24, we remember. But you know what the odd thing is about that? That Moses, in trying to deal with the rebellion of Israel, actually in turn rushed headlong into rebellion himself. You remember that? It was for a moment in time, we would say. I would present that verses of Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. This is one of those ones where you hate to see this kind of thing happen because of all that Moses had been through with them. The long journey. And in Numbers chapter 20, notice in verse 8 through 12 what it says. Take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. And the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beast also. Notice that at verse 12. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this congregation to the land which I have given them. When you say he rushed into that one, the things of man have taken over, the nature of man, and instead of speaking to the rock, he struck it. Not just once, but he did it twice. And that's what the Lord said to him in verse 12 again. You believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. And there was punishment for, you know, we say, well, that's a minor thing, isn't it? Is it a minor thing that he struck the rock? He had the rod, didn't he? He was told to take up the rod. Why not use it for emphasis? You know? It's more of a show that way. Especially with that question he says, must we fetch you water? Oh, there it was, right there, wasn't it? Must we fetch you? See, that's the problem about rebellion, is that many times in those rebelling states, don't consider the consequences of impulsively acting. They act impulsively on their desires or lust. Jeremiah 5:8-9, they were like well-fed, lusty stallions, it says. Everyone neighed after his neighbor's wife. Shall I not punish them for these things, saith the Lord? The problem that even Psalm 2 and verses 1 through 3 says, that they do not see the restrictions as beneficial, only as something that needs to be cast off. How many times we've heard that? Things are just, it's so restrictive. You know, the standards, it's too tough for me to follow. I feel like I'm caged in. Why do the nations rage, it says in Psalm 2 and verse 1, and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. That gives us that vision of, well, just about any animal. How many animals do you really like to be caged in anywheres? Don't like it. Humans have that. I mean, does anybody just really want to go to jail here? No. I know some that every time I take them to jail, guess what? They're like, hey, how are you doing? You're in here again. They love it, I guess. I mean, they get their three meals and they get to sleep. I guess, in a way, they do like being caged in from time to time. You think about the benefits of what God's Word is for us. Guidelines. It says that all Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable. That's the word that's used there in 2 Timothy 3, isn't it? Profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished in all good works. Isn't that very interesting? To think about all those words, doctrine, reproof, correction, instruction. See, that's beneficial. But not everyone looks at it that way. Did the Israelites look at it that way, as being beneficial for them? No. They had the people plotting a vain thing, nations raging. The rulers rejecting authority. In the days of old, as we go back to it yet again, God gives commands for the people's good. He has always done that. It was for the good of Adam and Eve that they did not do what? Eat of the tree that was in the midst of the garden of knowledge and good and evil. They were not to do that. Now Israel, Deuteronomy chapter 10, notice that in verses 12 and 13. Deuteronomy 10, verses 12 and 13. And now Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways and to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and His statutes which I command you today for your good? He's saying everything is for your good. It's to help you. Many times we see that, especially in Deuteronomy, about how the choice was given whether to live or die. It was their choice. But Moses said, choose to live. Choose to live. It's for your benefit. And of course we know that God punished again for the people's good as well. He punished. Jeremiah 32 verses 38 and 39. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. Then I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me forever for the good of them and their children after them. You know, I really didn't see the good in being punished by my parents at all. I mean, I still got welts. You know, we're talking about years and years later. I don't remember the last time I got a, I say beaten, but it's probably been about a year or so ago. No, I'm just joking. But, you know, those things stick out in our minds. Being punished. What was it for? My benefit. It's for to change the course of which I was going. To put me on a road that I need to be on. We understand that in a physical sense. I mean, as growing up, I didn't see it as clearly as I do now. And how wise they really are. But there's some good things that come out of this. By following God's laws brings blessings. James 1 and verse 25. See, that's the thing. Everybody wants blessings but don't want to do the work to get it. Nobody wants to put forth the effort. James 1 and verse 25 states, "But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty." Now there's some key words here. Okay, looking. And continues therein. It's not a one-time thing, is it? And it's not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one we blessed in what he does. There's a difference, right? I actually have to do what it says to do. That's the way it is. We can understand that in a physical sense, but we need to apply it to a spiritual that has some truly long-term consequences if I don't apply such. So, God gives commands for the people's good. He punished again for the people's good. And following God's laws brings blessings. How about this one, though? Being mule-headed. Have you ever been called that you're just mule-headed, you're stubborn? I took that after my daddy, and Kenzie gets to really get that. She's nodding. But that's what mules are notorious for, their stubbornness. Have you ever heard someone say, "I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway"? I don't know how many times I've said that in my life. And they're going back to that punishment phase that we just talked about. Although I know I shouldn't do it, I do it anyways. And all of a sudden, we're back at point A again. Proverbs 28 and verse 14. Proverbs 28 and verse 14. Happy is the man who is always reverent. Okay? But he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. Okay? Stubbornness, as we know, leads to sin. We've just been talking about them. I know we beat on them a pretty good bit, the children of Israel. Would you consider them stubborn? Absolutely. They were stubborn people. They had their own way of doing things. And here it is, the proverb writer. He's given the ingredients. He said, if you want to be happy, then you need to be a person that's reverent. One that has, you know, we see in the world today that people are losing respect for authority. Parents, it starts at the home. That's where it begins. If you don't have respect for your parents, then what happens? It goes downhill from there. I'm not going to answer anyone or anybody because I'm my own person. That person's not going to be a happy person because that's just going to be trouble. He who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. We see that throughout the scriptures. Constantly having this willfulness towards sin. Hebrews 10 verses 26 and 27, the Hebrew writer states, "For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth," see, that's horrible. There no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation which will devour the adversaries. That doesn't paint a really pretty picture at all, does it? Kind of like the domino effect. Stubbornly clinging to my desires, what I want for myself, Well, like a mule, some people stubbornly cling to their sins. Romans 2 and verse 5 tells us, but in accordance with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. Paul's telling us at Rome, in accordance with your hardness of heart. Well, that's where it starts. As we talk about many times, heart of the matter. You are treasuring up for yourself. So when he says that, it kind of takes that whole blame game out of it, doesn't it? I can't blame anybody else for anything. It's me, myself, and I that has treasured up for myself wrath in the day of wrath. I did this to myself. But I'll submit that like the horse, stubbornness must be broken. Proverbs 26 and verse 3. We notice that verse at the beginning of the lesson. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back. There's something interesting about that. Especially those that's been around horses and have dealt with them, probably a lot more than I have in my time. But either they will bend or they will break. Proverbs 29 and verse 1 gives us this thought. Proverbs 29 and verse 1. Notice there what the proverb writer says. He who is often rebuked and hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. That's a sad picture there that's given to us in the Proverbs. He who is often rebuked and hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Do you know that's basically what happened to Pharaoh? When God demanded the release of the children of Israel, Pharaoh, as we know, took the punishments. He refused to do what? He refused to bend. And eventually broke with his firstborn dead. And we remember what happened to his army, who drowned in the Red Sea. Man. Why? Why did all that happen? We just noticed a verse just a moment ago, if you remember there, about the day of calamity that we mentioned. What it leads to. The day of calamity. That's what happens. And Pharaoh knew it all too well, didn't he? After all of being told, we think about the prophets of old and what an intricate part they played in going and warning the kings. How they would often break because they hardened their hearts. Many times you see it, even in the New Testament, that Jesus called the Pharisees stiff-necked. Remember? Stiff-necked. And all of this is what we're talking about, a very basic lesson. But would I be considered someone who's stiff-necked? Hard-hearted? Hopefully not. But rather submitting to God. Rather than being wild, rebellious, or stubborn, we need to submit to the will of God. James chapter 4, if you will. James chapter 4. As we come to the last part of our lesson this evening. James chapter 4, verses 7 through 10. Remember this verse about submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Notice he goes on, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be afflicted, and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. I think that's very interesting words just as what we've been talking about from the proverb writer, from that of Psalm, from that of Jeremiah, from all these verses that we've talked about thus far. You see how it works. I have to draw nigh to God. And then in return, what happens? God never moves. He's there. It's me and you that move away from Him. He gives the command, cleanse your hands, purify your hearts, be afflicted, mourn and weep. That goes back to what we studied there in Proverbs. Not to harden our necks, suddenly being destroyed, and that without remedy, that it says in Proverbs 29 and verse 1. You know, it's like I said there at the beginning, this morning even, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know, we've heard that throughout our life, and how true that really is. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And this is why people are asked to follow Hebrews chapter 13. Notice Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17 about the leadership. Obey them. Hebrews 13 and verse 17. Obey them that have rule over you and submit yourselves. There's that submission. For they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. Consider that. Many people say, well, you know, God has pleasure in punishing people. He's always had pleasure in punishing people. But that's not true, is it? That's not the kind of things we find in Ezekiel 33 and verse 11. Say to them, as I live, says Lord God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. That's what he wants. That's his desire. Turn, he says, turn from your evil ways, for why should you die, O house of Israel? Why should you go down this road? But the fact of the matter is that as one of those examples as well that I bring out is found in 1 Samuel 15. We might remember this individual as being Saul. Remember him? King Saul? He kind of had his own intentions. You know, we might reason and say that it was really okay. I can see where he's coming from, why he did what he did with King Agag. Remember him? Taking some of the better things, you know. Not destroying everything. I mean, that'd be a waste, wouldn't it? Why would you want to do that? See how that goes, that natural man kicking in again. Well, you remember that he was called out on that. 1 Samuel 15 and verse 23 is where you find such words that came to him. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. He didn't utterly destroy the Amalekites, as we remember there in 1 Samuel chapter 15. But rather, he rebelled. Remember what Samuel said in verse 22. Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Now notice the question there. Notice what he says at the end. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. How many times we remember singing that song, Have Thine Own Way, Lord, Have Thine Own Way? Talking about molding us into what He wants us to be. Going where He wants us to go. And as stated, people really don't see the danger of rebellion or stubbornness, but God does. He sees it. In Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verses 18 through 21, you see such an example there. Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verses 18 through 21.
You talk about a command that, talking about a stubborn, rebellious son. Y'all remember studying about this in the Old Testament here, Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18. Now notice this. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his palace. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones. Man. Do you know what it says right after that, though? That he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. That's some pretty strong words, isn't it? I'll take the belt any day. Okay? I'm just saying. But notice the words that's given there. Thou shalt put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. What is fear? It's that word that we saw earlier in the lesson. Happy is the man that is always, starts with the R, reverend. It's respect. God is willing to forgive. But the Scriptures teach us just as well that He is able to punish. Isaiah 1, verses 18 through 20. Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red like crimson, they shall be as wool. If you are willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. But if you refuse and rebel, you shall be devoured by the sword. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. As we take this lesson, like I said, very, very basic. Very basic. We take it from what Psalm 32 and verse 9 of our text stated. Be ye not as the horse or as the mule which have no understanding. I hope that we do have understanding. I hope that we are looking to the Scriptures that provides us the reproof, the correction, the instruction in righteousness. I hope that we allow that to reprove us. I hope that we're bending and not breaking. Let us come near unto thee, is what it says. Let us come near unto thee. That's not what the horses and them do that's mentioned there, the mules. But he goes on to say, be glad in the Lord, in verse 11, and rejoice, ye righteous, and shout for joy, all ye that are upright in heart. I hope that none of us here will have to experience this, the punishment part that God is able to do, but that we're always willing of ourselves to submit to Him in all things. So the thing is, we're going to end with these questions is, which destiny will be for us? Are we going to continue horsing around, or as we say, being mule-headed, or are we going to present ourselves unto God a broken and contrite heart that David even talked about in the Psalms? I hope that we are always presenting to God. As James said, as we read earlier, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord that He may lift you up. So get your psalm books ready and the song of encouragement. The lesson is officially yours. The invitation stands ready that if any man hear my voice and open the door, he says, I will come in. That's obviously talking to one that's not stubborn, but one that is willing to submit to what God tells us to do. And all the things that we have observed, all the different things, what David says is, don't be like the horse, don't be like the mule, which have no understanding. If we're subject in any way, won't you come? We should stand and sing a song that's been selected.
There's a stranger at the door.